From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is The Why. I'm Shai Ben-Yaakov. If you've turned on network TV in the last few weeks, you've probably seen some of this.
Here in Philadelphia, Mayor Kenney tackles tough problems and brings us together.
He took on those corporate interests and their lobbyists who would deny us affordable housing, safe and stable school systems, safe communities, and we figured out a path to win.
I grew up here and want safe and strong neighborhoods where we all can live. I'm Kenyatta Johnson for City Council. From here, for here.
These highly produced ads featuring glad handing and baby kissing can only mean one thing. It's primary season once again in Philadelphia. With an overwhelming majority of voters in the city registered as Democrats, the Democratic primary has been the race that determines most of the winners of the general election for decades. But was it always that way? And why might this race signal a new faction of the Democratic Party rising to power? Today on The Why, Rise of the Reformers. I talked to WHYY senior reporter Dave Davies about how the Democrats rose to power in the first place and the battle within the party that's playing out this year. So Dave, Democrats dominate Philadelphia. Registered Democrats outnumber Republicans in the city about 7-1. So there's 7 Democrats for every 1 Republican. Was it always this way?
No. In fact, the city was dominated by a Republican machine for the first half of the 20th century. That all changed at the end of the 1940s when there was a Republican mayor, Bernie Samuel, and lots of corruption. It was a different city government then. City council had a lot more say over patronage, and this is before my time, but I'm told that whole classes of city employees picked up their paychecks at the Republican Party headquarters.
Whoa.
There were scandals, and then a new team of reformers led by two guys, Richardson Dilworth and Joe Clark, came in and turned the city Democratic. They wrote a new city charter, completely rewrote the way city government operates. We now had a strong mayor who was limited to 2 terms. A lot of the jobs went from patronage to civil service, and there was a general feeling that government was more efficient and more honest, and Democrats have won every mayoral election since.
So you had the Democratic Party taking over, but what happened to elections? Were they competitive after that?
Yeah, the Republicans were a true competitive opposition party for decades. I mean, I can remember when Republican mayoral primaries had 3 real competitors, congressmen and such, running. They came very close to beating the Democrats a few times. In 1967, the Republican was Arlen Specter. In 1987,
well-known politician for many, many years.
Went on to great things. Yeah. In 1987, Frank Rizzo, who was the former Democrat, ran as the Republican Party candidate and almost beat Wilson Good for re-election. And then the last time was in 1999 when Sam Katz, a businessman, also a former Democrat, ran and barely lost to John Street. We haven't had a close election in a general election sense.
And why is that? Why do you think it's gotten worse since then?
Well, I part of it is demographics. As we've seen more white flight to the suburbs, the city has become had more people of color, and that's tended to favor the Democratic Party. Also, since the 90s, the Republican Party has taken a much harder turn to the right. It's more conservative, more out of step with Philadelphia voters. And I have to say, Republicans, when they've had a chance to get some power, haven't always distinguished themselves as champions of honest government around here. John Purcell was a ward leader and state representative from Northeast Philadelphia who became Speaker of the State House. He pleaded guilty in 2011 in a corruption scandal.
The grand jury concluded Purcell's illegal actions totaled over $10 million of our taxpayer money. And now our
they haven't always been exactly the kind of opposition that voters would be drawn to.
So if the Democrats have such a registration edge, does that mean that the whole election process doesn't really matter?
Well, it means the general election often doesn't, but it doesn't mean that there is no choice. You know, I think for the big offices like mayor, like the district attorney's race 2 years ago, within the Democratic Party, you had real competition and people with real differences, and there were real debates and real choices. So I think there's a real measure of democracy within the Democratic Party for the big offices. I think it's a bit more corrosive when you talk about things like the state legislative delegation, because they tended to be chosen by ward leaders, often ward leaders themselves, and it was sort of a closed club and was hard to get into. And I think over time, you tended to see more people with a transactional approach to politics And it kind of shut anybody out who wasn't part of the club. And I think that wasn't a good thing for the city.
So is anything different this time around?
What I think we find now is that it's still the Democratic primary that decides who is going to serve in most offices. But power within the Democratic Party is just more diffuse. I mean, you can get labor unions to support you and various other groups that are increasingly showing some punch in elections.
And what are some of those groups, you know, this time around? Who are we seeing, outside of the typical party establishment coming in?
Well, the most interesting development is the growth of progressive organizations, which are driven in some respects by young voters and are certainly motivating and energizing young voters. You know, 2 years ago, we had quite an election where an incumbent city controller, Alan Butkiewicz, who'd been in that office for 12 years, was unceremoniously tossed out and replaced with a woman who was a first-time, relatively little-known candidate, Rebecca Reinhardt. That happened because millennials got out and voted in numbers that we had not seen. And so I think what we're seeing are some groups, one of them called Reclaim Philadelphia, that has gotten increasingly organized, and it'll be interesting to see what kind of impact they have on this election.
What is Reclaim Philadelphia? What is that? What is their platform?
Right. Well, it's a group that grew out of the Bernie Sanders presidential campaign in 2016. I mean, progressives who wanted to stick together and continue to kind of make the change that they saw the Sanders campaign as advancing.
We have today a grotesque level of income and wealth inequality, which is unsustainable and un-American.
After the election of Donald Trump, I mean, I spoke to Nikhil Saval, who was one of the on their steering committee.
We had already built up an infrastructure, and then when a bunch of people were sort of rudderless, upset, angry after the election, we were ready to organize that sentiment. We had meetings, you know, of 20 to 30 people, 50 at most up until that point. And then
he told me that after Trump was elected, their next meeting had hundreds of people.
I think our November or December meeting, whenever that was something like 200 people. And we've never sort of dipped below that, you know, since then, and have gone substantially above.
Reclaim Philadelphia a few months ago had an event that you attended. You know, what did you see out of the group there?
And I am excited to see what our collective power as a power organization can do in this election cycle to change Philadelphia for the better and lift all of us up.
It's pretty impressive. It was one of their citywide meetings. They're a membership organization. And it was at the Friends Center at 15th and Arch. There were hundreds and hundreds of people there, cheering their endorsed candidates, cheering people speaking for the platform, one of whom was Elizabeth Fiedler, a state representative who listeners to this station will remember was a former reporter, and gave a rousing speech.
Power is the ability to shape our world. And in this room today, I see tremendous power.
So I think that we are on a trend of sort of outsiders getting elected by a new generation of Democrats.
I spoke to Joe Corrigan. He's a Democratic strategist who represents progressive candidates around the city and the region.
These are primarily women. They are often of, you know, college educated or higher. They're the same kind of voters who have swept, you know, a number of new Democrats into the state legislature in the suburbs and, you know, members of Congress across the country.
So how will we know if some of these groups are gaining ground? How will we know in this election?
Yeah, this will be interesting to see. I mean, one of the people that Reclaim Philadelphia and other progressive groups have endorsed is a woman named Erica Almirón. She was the executive director of Juntos, which is an immigrant rights group.
Juntos's mission is to build power for Latino community in the city of Philadelphia and beyond. And the
now,
mission is
a few decades ago, you might have seen her as a protest candidate. I think she's got some real momentum. She's one of Reclaim's endorsed candidate, as well as those of other progressive groups. If she makes a run, that would be an indication that this movement has some real punch. Another thing to keep an eye on is incumbent city councilman Alan Dom. And this is a wealthy guy, a real estate investor, and I think he sees himself as somebody who's a watchdog of efficient government. He really scrutinizes the budget.
Alan Dom.
Alan Dom.
Alan Dom.
a great guy and really believes in our city.
But a lot of the progressives don't like him. They think he's a guy who benefits from these real estate tax abatements, and they'd like to see him defeated. So if he doesn't fare so well, that will be an indication of the power of this progressive movement.
What about the business community? Where are they in this election?
This is interesting. You know, for about 15 years now, the city has had campaign finance limits and a pay-to-play law. And I think that has really inhibited law firms and developers and other kinds of businesses that used to write big checks in mayoral and council races. The rules are now such that if they write too big a check, they would eliminate their eligibility to compete for city contracts. Now, they could form a super PAC, like unions have done, and one of these committees enabled by Citizens United and put big checks there, but they just haven't done it. And so I think that has meant that in the balance of power, you've seen progressive groups and unions relatively stronger than the business community used to be in municipal elections.
Of course, I should say we also have a mayor's race coming up. We have a fairly popular incumbent running against two very well-known but pretty underfunded candidates. What are the issues that are playing out there?
The biggest single issue is the soda tax. Mayor Kenney's two opponents, Ellen Butkovitz and State Senator Anthony Williams, say the tax is a terrible idea. It erodes city businesses. It's regressive. Mayor Kenney has stuck by it. And polls show the tax is generally unpopular. This is not a terrible surprise. Taxes aren't exactly popular. And the beverage industry has spent a lot of money attacking it.
Before the tax, everything was fine. We were making ends meet. But as of right now, with the beverage tax, it's just killing the city.
So the soda tax is the biggest single clear issue. Apart from that, the opposition candidates say the mayor simply hasn't aggressively attacked the city's problems, a rising homicide rate, a persistently high poverty rate. And they say they can do better.
There's going to be a cabinet-level person appointed to my cabinet. That person is going to be responsible for cutting poverty in Philadelphia by half within an 8-year period.
Inequity in city contracts, a lack of diversity.
Not in reducing African-American contracts.
And Mayor Kenney, I think he has a defense on some of these cases, but in this campaign, he has seemed almost disinterested in defending his record. He hasn't been appearing on the campaign trail. In debates, he has seemed annoyed that he has to even pay attention to these two. And it's probably not the best way to make a case for voters that you've got the energy and ideas to do another term.
So, you know, lest we forget, there is technically a Republican primary in the city. For mayor, we already know who the candidate will be. There's only one candidate on the Republican side. His name is Billy Cangalini. Can you tell me a little about him?
Not a lot. He is a lawyer from South Philadelphia who ran as a Democrat for state representative a couple of years ago. He's funny.
I'm a blue-collar guy from here in Philadelphia. Even if I had the hundreds of thousands of dollars to be one of those 12 on that piece of paper, paying for friends or for votes is less than Philadelphia deserves.
I mean, you can find his commercials on YouTube for when he ran for a judge. And he plays music and he says, don't listen to the machine. You want Billy Cangalini. He's an engaging and funny fellow.
When that man or woman hands you that slip of paper with the big spenders who paid to be on it, take it in both hands, crumble it up, and throw it away. Then vote for the 12 that you trust the most. If you don't know him, don't vote for him. By now you know me, William Cangalini, the best person for the bench.
He's a character, but, you know, in the past, Republicans have often turned to Democrats to convert to their party and run for office. And sometimes they've been serious people like Frank Rizzo and like Sam Katz and others. And then sometimes they settle for what they can get. You know, it's hard to convince substantive people who have jobs and lives to take months running as a Republican in a race where they have no chance. And if you look at the 10 district city council races on the ballot right now, Republicans couldn't even find a warm body for 6 of them. This
right.
It is a rough way to make a living trying to run elections as a Republican in Philadelphia.
Dave, thanks for coming back in.
Good to be here.
The Y is produced by me, Shai Ben-Yaakov, along with Annette John Hall and Alex Stern, with editorial direction from Katie Culinary. We had editing help on this episode from Eugene San. Tweet me at Shai Ben-Yaakov. We'll be back tomorrow.